Matthew 24, covering some, I suppose, difficult verses again. It will lighten up, ease up, or something before too long, but we're not quite there yet. We're actually talking about the time of tribulation in Matthew 24, and then into Matthew 25. He's talking about what will take place, as we would call it, the end times, and right before His coming, and that certainly deals with the tribulation period. And we've covered several things. It's a time of discipline, deception, disagreements, dearth, disease, disturbances, discord, defection, disobedience, deliverance, declaration, desecration, and devastation. We'll look a little bit tonight that this tribulation will be a time of deceit. It will be marked by deceit. In other words, deceiving others. Others being deceived. Deceit or deception can go two ways. We can be deceivers or we can be deceived. I shouldn't say quite like that. Hope there's nobody here. A person can be deceived or can deceive. In other words, there are some people who think they're right. They're not. Some who know they aren't but try to deceive others and to think that they are. We'll look at that. Some of these folks will try to declare that they're people of God, and there's a reason for it. Again, we're in the tribulation period in our references tonight. Verse 23, then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. Jesus said to this generation that will live during the tribulation period, right before He comes back the second time to earth, not the rapture. He says it's going to be a time of turmoil, if you remember it. It's going to be a time of terrible difficulties and hardships and anguish, so much to where they'll have to flee just to live, hide just to live, scrounge just to find something to eat. It'll be a miracle that God protects and provides, but He will. And He says, if any shall come unto you and saying, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. Now, one of the things that's going to be big during that time is talk about the Messiah. And He, you know, He is on the way. He is coming. The talk of the Jews have always been the Messiah. When He's coming, when will He come, who will He be like, what will He be like, what will He look like. It's always been the talk of the Jews. And it will certainly not be different then. In fact, it'll be enhanced. You need to realize the turmoil that they're going through is so severe that they realize their only hope of survival, I'm talking about believing Jews or believers, they realize that the only hope that they have of survival is the Messiah coming back. They realize this Antichrist and the false prophet and all his men and all his people, all they want to do is destroy and kill. They're out seeking for believers, and they're doing their best to annihilate the earth of all believers. So Jesus said, if you hear somebody say, oh, it's Christ is over here, He says, don't believe it. Now, we need to understand, the devil realizes what these believers are wanting. He realizes, he knows about the Messiah, he knows about the Lord coming back, and he knows why those believers are hiding, and he knows exactly how to lure them out, or at least what will be the most likely possibility of luring them out to where he can find them and kill them. So he spreads rumors, they spread rumors about, well, Christ is over here. We'll see that in just a minute even further. Or Christ is over there. Or I heard a rumor that the Messiah was over in this part of town. So he says, if you hear that, do not believe it. In other words, he's more or less saying, you can't believe anybody. You can't believe anybody that says anything. These people who are going around claiming to be the Christ, do not believe it. He's going to tell us why in just a minute, verse 24. For there shall arise false Christ. There'll be some people who are rising up, and notice what it says. There shall arise false Christ and false prophets. There'll be some that say, I am the Messiah. There are some mad men, but there are also, I mean by that, insane men or even women who think they're of God. Charles Manson thought he was for a little while. At least he claimed to be Jesus. If you doubt, if you wonder, he wasn't. There's no doubt about that. But there'll be people who claim to be the Christ, claim to be the Messiah, and then there'll be false prophets. There'll be people going around saying, I'm speaking for God. I have a message from heaven. And Jesus is warning them. Notice what he says about them. They're not just speaking great things. They're not just saying things that are very persuasive. They're quite convincing. They seem to have an argument. They seem to be telling the truth. Remember, we're talking about being deceived. There shall arise false Christs and false prophets and shall show great signs and wonders. They not only have great words, they have great works. They are able to do signs and wonders. We call them miracles. That's what the Bible uses for to refer to miracles. Again, the devil has an idea of planting imposters, liars, deceivers. And some of these people will have the ability to do the miraculous. Now, some people say these are fake or false or phony or trickery or magic somehow. I don't believe that. I believe that they really will have the power. One of the reasons maybe why they say that this signs and wonders will be fake, I guess because some of them think the devil can't do it, but the devil can. He can do quite a bit if you remind yourself. He did to Job. He caused storms to come. He caused the enemy to come and kill the children. He caused boils and sickness to come on Job. If you remember when Moses was dealing with the people of Egypt, the enchanters did what he did. They, by the power of the devil, did things that Moses and God, through God's power, did. No doubt the devil's got power. And some of his people have that kind of power. And it seems to me like that's exactly what this is saying here. They have signs and wonders. Now, what I was going to say, Paul talks about that the man of sin, the Antichrist, will come with signs and lying wonders. And maybe that's one of the reasons why some people say these are fake miracles or false. But the word lying there means to lead in a wrong direction or to deceive. And what he's talking about there, Paul, is the fact that that the Antichrist does, he claims to be of God, but it's not, it's of the devil. That's why he calls it lying. Not that he doesn't have power, but that the power he uses, he claims to be from God. Remember, if you remember, he's going to set up an image in the temple, and he's going to claim himself to be God. He's going to claim that he is of God. But that's a lie. That's what we're talking about, deceit, deceivers. They'll show great signs and wonders. Listen, insomuch that if it were possible, thank the Lord for those words, they shall deceive the very elect. If it were possible, even believers would be fooled, would be deceived, would follow these. Hey, they are so convincing in what they say, how they speak, so convincing. They say, here's the Christ. I am the Christ. I am the Messiah. The Messiah is over. If somebody said the Messiah is uptown in High Point where the railroad track goes across Main Street, let's go see him. He's finally here. And there's going to be people saying that type of thing. We'll see in just a minute. And they will be so convincing. And now and then also they have these powers to do the miraculous. And Jesus said it will be so convincing that if it were possible, even believers would take it in and would believe it. And then he says, in essence, it's not possible. You know, we may have periods of doubt or fear or dread. We may be overwhelmed sometimes with our emotions. But a true believer never loses their real faith. And that's exactly what Jesus is saying here. He has power, no doubt the devil does. And he's a liar, there's no doubt. And he is an angel of light, there's no doubt. And he's able to deceive, but he can't deceive the true believers. years, and I rejoice in that. Look in verse 25. Behold, I have told you before. Now, I really want to look at that in verse two ways. I want to look at it like this. I have told you this before, and I am now telling you again. And to be honest, I like it that way, but that's not really what he's saying. He is saying this, and this is really good too. I haven't told you now before it happens. I am letting you know what's going to happen to where, hey, you remember who he's talking to? The generation that's living when this stuff's going on. To those people who are living when these things are happening. And he says, I am telling you before it happens to where when it does happen, you'll be ready. You'll be prepared. I'm so glad that we have that safety mechanism in our life. God's given us the Bible to warn us about things that may come in our life. The God of heaven, his voice, his spirit will speak to your heart, and he will warn you about what might could happen. This morning, I was taking Connor over to the daughter-in-law's where he stays during the day. And for some reason, I turned down that last little road heading to their house. And I, for some reason, just felt kind of uneasy. I'm not lying to you, but I'm not stretching the truth. And I looked ahead, and a big old pickup truck was coming down the road toward me. And I noticed he wasn't giving me a whole lot of room. And I thought, well, he'll get a little bit closer. He'll move over to his lane. But the opposite happened. The more he came, the more he moved over right in front of me. And honestly, I was going over heading toward a mailbox, and he kept coming right towards me, and I blew the horn. And I don't know if he heard me or if he finally looked up or what, and he swerved and missed me probably about 10 feet. And for some reason, the Lord had already prepared me to help me to be attentive of that happening before it happened. And that's what Jesus is saying here. I am making you aware of what's going to happen to where when it does happen, it won't get you. It won't overwhelm you. I have told you beforehand that you won't be overcome when it does happen, that you won't be surprised. In other words, he says, don't tell anybody. Nobody told you, because I'm telling you now. I think that probably means that we need to listen to him when he speaks to where we'll be ready for what's ahead. He doesn't always tell us every dark possibility or everything in the future. Sometimes things just slap us in the face unexpectedly, there's no doubt. But I'm glad he does prepare us, and he makes us ready for what's ahead if we'll listen so many times. And he sure is these folks. Look at verse 26. Wherefore, if they say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. We're talking about deceit. There'll be deceivers, there'll be liars. And you know what a liar does? They tell lies. And they say, if somebody tells you, hey, he's in the secret place or he's in the desert, somebody will say, you know what? I heard about the Messiah's already here. You remember, they'll be hiding out, many of them. And they'll be staying in secluded places themselves. They probably won't be exposed to a whole lot of news or what's going on. And by word of mouth, probably is all the information they'll get. And Jesus said, if somebody comes up and tells you, Jesus, hey, or the Messiah, excuse me, he's out in the desert. You remember that big rock out there? We've been there before. He's out there. He says to his people, come to meet him. Or, you know, the upper room, that room that we've hung out before, somebody told me the Messiah's over there waiting for people. Now, why would anybody say that? Well, I think the reason is obvious. The devil, hey, remember the Antichrist desire is to kill every believer he can. And what better way to find those believers than to spread rumors that their Messiah is in a specific place? What if I told you that the man you've been looking for, the Messiah that you've been waiting for, and your only hope of survival is at the base of the big chair in Thomasville? You know what you'd do? You'd run. Hey, you know what you would do if you believe what I say? You'd run there as fast as you could. But the Antichrist will spread those rumors through his liars, and they'll be waiting for those believers as they come to where they can kill them. And that's why Jesus said, how did he end the verse? Believe it not. Don't believe it. Now, maybe somebody's thinking. I hope you're thinking a little bit. But maybe somebody's thinking, well, if Jesus tells us and tells everybody, I say us as if we're them, if he tells everybody to not believe anybody, what happens when the Messiah really does come? How will you know? Well, if you thought that, I'm sort of glad you did, because we're getting ready to cover that in the next verse, verse 27. He said, if you hear a rumor that the Messiah has come, don't believe it. For, this is why. For as lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. He says, I'll tell you why you can know those people are liars. If they say he's over there in a secluded place, he's over there in some special room, he's out there in the desert, and only a few people know about this so far, you're getting in on the cutting edge. You're one of the few that have heard the good news that the Messiah has come. He says, if you hear that, you don't believe it, because when he comes, it'll be like lightning that shines from the east to the west. It'll be like the sky lighting up with a flash of light. In other words, there won't be any doubt about it. When it happens, nobody will say, is that really him? Can we believe it this time? He says, as lightning that cometh out of the east and shineth into the west, even so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. There's no reason to believe he's in some secluded room. He's not going to come and hide out in any room. There's no reason to believe a lie when they say he's out in the back of the desert somewhere trying to hide away, because he's not going to come and hide away. He'll not need CBN or NBC or whatever things are. Yeah. He'll announce his arrival himself, because he'll come in all his glory, as we'll see. There's nobody that's come like him before. Now remember, he's not talking here about the rapture. Rapture happens 7 years earlier than this. This is the second coming, when he comes at the end of the tribulation period, when he comes down and touches the earth, and he deals with the Antichrist, and he sets up his kingdom. John talks about this in Revelation 19, begin reading in verse 11. I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse. I like that already. And him that sat upon him is called Faithful and True, and righteousness, and he doth to judge and make war. So he comes, the Lord comes, riding on a white stallion. He comes in righteousness, and he comes to judge and to make war. His eyes were as flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns. He had a name written that no man knew but he himself, and he was clothed with a vesture dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. So we know who he is. He's the Lord. His clothes, and then the Word of God, and the armies which were in heaven followed him, listen, upon white horses. Wonder who that is. It's me and you. And the armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in white linen, white and clean. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, and with it they might smite the nations, and shall rule them with a rod of iron. And he treadeth out the winepress of the fierceness of the wrath of Almighty God. And he hath on his vesture and on his thigh name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He's talking here about what Jesus is talking about. He said, when the Messiah comes, you don't have to wonder if he's hiding in a room somewhere. He'll come and it'll be known to the world. They won't wonder who he is. And you won't either, by the way, says Jesus to the believers. He'll come with a wrought iron. He'll come judging and making war, as we'll see in a minute why. His feet will stand on the Mount of Olives. Zechariah 14:4 says that the Mount of Olives, when he lands on the Mount of Olives and his feet land on the Mount of Olives, it splits in the middle. There's an awful lot going on. He comes to execute judgment on all unbelievers, Jude 15 tells us. You see, what he's doing, as we'll see in just a second, is coming to deal with sin. Deal with the Antichrist, deal with the false prophet, deal with the unbelievers of that day. Verse 28, and Jesus said, by the way, remind yourself, when it happens, you won't have to wonder. You won't have to say, well, I wonder if that's it. Oh, no, you'll know. Verse 28. And wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. It's a difficult verse, to be honest, in some ways. Wherever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Well, we got two things mentioned in this verse in particular, a carcass and an eagle, or eagles. And the word eagles here can be translated, the translation, the word can be an eagle, like our bald eagle, but it can also be a vulture, and you have to look at the context of the scripture to determine which one is meant. And surely here, he's not talking about a real eagle, not in this context, as we'll see. He's talking about vultures. He says, wheresoever the carcass is. Well, a real eagle, a bald eagle, they're not looking for dead stuff, rotten stuff, decaying stuff, but vultures are. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. Remember now, the disciples have asked, when is this going to be? And in Luke 17, 31, they said, where's all this going to happen? And he explains all this. So he's talking about here about vultures that are carnivorous. They eat dead and decaying flesh. They gather in groups and they wait for that person or that animal or that whatever to die to where they can go and devour him. There's no other reason why they're there. They like dead stuff. They like decaying stuff. And what Jesus is talking about here, at least part of it, is this. One of the reasons of the Messiah coming is to deal with sin. Israel had been corrupt for years. Still is, by the way. Don't believe in the true God, not the Jesus of the true God. Doesn't believe in the Lord. The world by that time will be so ungodly. It'll be like that dead, decaying carcass that verse talks about. Wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. And he says, in essence, he says, the Messiah God will be like that vulture. And that may not be the best picture you can think of when talking about God, but he's talking about God's judgment. And he says, like those vultures that wait for that decay, that dying animal to finally die to where they can go and devour him. God is waiting until the sin is complete to where when judgment is justified, when it gets so bad they deserve judgment, and he says, like that vulture, his judgment will come down, will descend and devour those sinners, those ungodly people. I'm convinced that's what the verse means. If you think about it, the process of a vulture starts with a fall. Oh, man alive. Oh, this watch just goes way too fast. The process of a vulture starts with a fall. An animal be walking along and falls, either because of disease or injury, and lays there and dies and begins to decay. Well, that vulture sees the fall and hangs around. Won't be long, there'll be more hanging around. They're waiting for that animal that's still alive, but sick and injured and dying, to die. And once that animal dies, they pounce, they come in and devour. And God says, that's how my judgment is. Israel, mankind really deserves judgment, but I'm going to wait until that judgment is really deserved. But when it is, I'll come. I will judge, and I will judge severely. I will judge harshly. Revelation 19 tells us a little bit about that. Beginning in verse 17, I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying, to all the fowls that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather yourself together unto the supper of the great God, that you may eat the flesh of kings, and the flesh of captains, and the flesh of mighty men, and the flesh of horses, and them that sit on them. And I won't read the rest of the verses that I intended to, save a little bit of time. What he's talking about is the Antichrist and all his army. They will wage war against God's people. And the tribulation period will pretty much end by them trying to defeat Jesus and his army coming from heaven. Guess who's going to win? and Jesus will come, the Messiah will come, we will come, His armies will come. We won't have to fight at all because Jesus is going to win by the word of His mouth. He'll speak it, and so it'll be. But many people will die. The Bible talks about a river of blood, or at least blood being up to the horse's bridle because of the death and the carnage. In other words, God's going to judge. These people who said no to Jesus, these people who said yes to the Antichrist, they're going to pay. Then there's going to be a time that's marked by disturbances. Look in verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and a star shall fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven shall be shaken. It's like most all of creation is just going into convulsions. It's like everything is disturbed. And it says the sun will be darkened. Of course, the moon gets her light from the reflection of the sun. The sun shall be darkened, the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven shall be shaken. Now, there are some that try to spiritualize this or symbolize this and say it's talking about men and women of authority. I don't see that at all. And the reason I don't see it is because Revelation 6, beginning in verse 12, tells us about those things that's going to happen exactly like that. There's no need in spiritualizing things if they don't lend to being spiritual. There's no need in us trying to symbolize things if it's not clear that it's a symbol. In other words, when he talked about war and famines and earthquakes earlier in these verses, we didn't think they were symbols. And there's no need in thinking that this is symbols. In other words, it's a chaotic time, and even the creation is in chaos, disturbances. And then I'll mention this. The time of tribulation will be marked by deliverance, by the Lord's help, the Lord's return. You see, He's been predicting this whole chapter, talking about Him coming back, the Messiah coming back, the fact that He left and Acts chapter 1, and one day He'll come back, and that's mentioned in Acts 1:11. He'll come back just like He left, but He's going to come to deliver His own. He's going to come to defeat the Antichrist and all false believers or all liars or all unbelievers. He's going to deal with all them. Remember judgment, what we just talked about. But He's going to come to deliver His own. Appear the sign of the man in heaven, verse 30. Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in clouds in heaven, of heaven with power and great glory. Notice what He's talking about, the Son of Man coming in heaven, and all the tribes shall mourn. Every person, every type of person on earth, from every nation under heaven will mourn. Because they'll be judged, because the Lord's going to deal with them. But Revelation 17:14 says He makes war, the Antichrist does, with the Lamb and with His followers. And He's not going to win. He's going to be defeated. It's going to be a time of mourning of unbelievers. It's going to be a time of mourning for Israel, because they're going to see their Messiah. They'll see Jesus. And Zechariah 14 tells us they'll see the wounds in His hands and His feet. And they'll realize Jesus really was the Son of God. Jesus really was the Messiah. So they'll mourn. It says all the tribes of the earth shall mourn. It literally means to beat the chest or beat the breast. Remember the publican that would not even look toward God, but he beat upon his breast and he says, "Oh God, be merciful, be the sinner." That's what it's talking about here. Israel will see once and for all Jesus was the Messiah. Tell you one thing, there won't be any pride in that day. There won't be any arrogance in that day. There won't be any bragging about that day. It'll be a lot of humility. It'll be a whole lot of brokenness, as it should be. Notice what he says. Son of Man in heaven. Then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. They'll see Him coming in power and great glory. Power means that authority. He is God, and He's coming as God. He came before as an humble man. submitting to the flesh, a body, submitting to man to be abused and rejected, and submitting to the cross and to the death. But when he comes back this time, the second time, to earth, he won't come in humility. He'll come as he is, God, 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 King of kings and Lord of lords. He comes with power and great glory. It literally means him, himself, being revealed. I don't know what that's going to be like. Seeing God as he is, seeing Jesus as he really is. The disciples on the Mount of Transfiguration got a little glimpse of that. And Peter said, let's just camp out right here. This is good. But in that time, his glory will be revealed. He'll be seen as he is. You know, Hollywood uses all kinds of special effects. Music groups use all kinds of lights and explosions and fire, trying to bring their program to the full brilliance and to make an impression. And Jesus doesn't need any of that. The glory of him is revealed. Hey, you know why heaven's so wonderful? You know why we think about heaven as a place of brilliance? It's not because there's a light up there. It's not because there's three lights. It's not because it has its own special sun, S-U-N. It's because of the sun. He is the light of the heavens. And he'll come and it'll be a glorious thing. He'll be seen as he is. Verse 31, I'm going to try and touch on some things. This is the last one probably. He shall send his angels with great sound of trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. He'll use his angels again. He has many times, and he will then, to go out and collect his believers, his elect. I'm talking primarily, certainly, about Israel. Israel's always been God's elect, his chosen people, and that's who it's talking about here. The angels, hey, they've scattered everywhere. They're hiding everywhere. And the angels will go and find every one of them. Notice how it's worded. He sent his angels and the great sound of the trumpet, and they shall gather together as he led from the four winds. That means from every corner of the world. They won't miss a one. Ain't nobody going to be hiding behind a rock and didn't know it happened. He's going to, when he comes, he'll gather his believers, the elect, together from one corner of heaven to the other. And this is when Israel is going to recognize him and see who he is and see his wounds. And this is when Paul talks about the blindness of Israel being temporary or in part. Their eyes will be open. And the Bible really in Romans 11 talks about really a nation being born in the day because these people will see him and listen and will believe for sure he is the Messiah. He is the one. So he comes, and he deals with the Antichrist and all his bunch, and he'll go and gather all his elect, and what's going to happen? Let me just mention this, and I'll be done, maybe. The Antichrist is going to get cast in the lake of fire. False prophet is going to get cast in the lake of fire. All the followers are going to get cast in the lake of fire. The devil, he's got something special for him. He's going to put him into the bottomless pit for 1,000 years. Unfortunately, going to let him out for a season after that to where he can tempt those people who live through the millennial reign in their natural bodies. So he deals with the unbelievers. He deals with the devil's crowd. He judges them. But he also collects all his elect, all the believers, all those who really know him as Savior, and he ushers in the kingdom. He sets up the rule and reign on earth, and they go into the millennial reign. Some of them will live, of course, with their bodies still intact in their normal and natural bodies. Well, if I go on, I'll make everybody mad, so I'll stop. The next few verses are sure good. Let's stand together. I've said tonight more than one time, we and us. We won't be here during the tribulation period, but I want to try and make it real for us. That these things one day will happen to somebody.